You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Shalom Brocha, we're in the Yeshiva of Agoin Rabbi Lezer Meir Teitz, Rabbi Lezer Meir Ben Arav Mordechai Pinchas, Zatzal, the city from which I'm speaking with you, Elizabeth, New Jersey, that I've been living close to 20 years, is Kodur Be'Avelus. The Atoros has been taken from them, the Rav Ha'ir. I turned to my friend, Rav Chaim Schachter Shlita, to speak during this period as a schus, of course, for the Nifter's Neshama, and also to give over to those who were perhaps unaware something of the sheer koima of this great man. Both of us sat in the Besdin of Elizabeth with Rabbi Lezer Meir Zatzal as the Av Besdin. I moved to Elizabeth in 2006. Rav Chaim has been a member of the Besdin for how long? Since when?
1992,
which is quite a bit of time. And I don't think, Rav Chaim, you're not from this area. How is it that you come to be a chaver in the Elizabeth Besdin, a very important part of that Besdin? And how is it you came particularly to have the connection to Rav Teitz, that's all?
I was very committed to become a Masada get in the early 1990s. I still am, so a very active Masada get. I minister about 100 gittin a year. We're recognized by Israel's Rabbanut HaRashit. When I was doing my shimush, my training, I tried to watch every based in the New York area. And I was learning at the time with Chavrus in Yeshiva University's Yad Yadin College, learning Hilchos Ribbis with Rabbi Lezer Meir's son, Rav Elio David. And he said, well, why don't you come and watch my father being Masada Gittin? I said, I would relish the opportunity. So whenever I could, I would, whenever he was Masada Get, I drove into Elizabeth and made it my business to come and watch the Gittin. And when it came time in 1993, after I received my Kabbalos, my authorizations from Rav Avad Yosef, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, Rav Gedalia Schwartz, from Rabbanim in Rav Melech Shechter, Rabbanim here, and in Eretz Yisrael, through Masada Gittin. So then the time came to decide, well, which basin did I want to be part of? So I asked Rav Teitz if I could be part of his basin. It had a long history. The first get that it was Masada was in 1913. It was in Trenton, New Jersey, which is actually a get being written in Trenton, New Jersey this week for the first time since 1913. And so it's Masora, which is a theme we're going to talk about today in our conversation about it. It's a tradition, it's a long, solid tradition. It's recognized by the Israeli rabbinate, by the Rabbanut HaRashit Israel. And, the two things specifically really impressed me about Rabbi Teitz. Number one was that he told me that any money that he earned from Seder Gittin, he gave to Tzedakah. And that was mentioned on the, at the Levaya by the Maspidim and by his daughter Shifra. And he also said any money that he received from funerals, he also donated. And that was very, very impressive. Now that especially was very, very impressive because if you've been to Rabbi Teitz's house here in Elizabeth, the house was, I would not say it's opulent.
He lived in an extremely modest, menschliche, kovadike existence.
He said to me, I don't need the money. When I looked at the house, I said, I think he could use the money to update the house. But no, he didn't need it. It wasn't anything. He and the Rebbeson didn't feel that was necessary. So that, to me, instead of updating the house, they gave the money to Stucker. That was unbelievable.
He told me that he went to Rav Spitz in New York.
That's correct.
You know, of course, this is the father of the great Rosh Koyl in Queens, Rosh Sholem Spitz, the Magid Shir, Rosh Koyl in the Yeshiva Shaar HaTorah. His father was a Weltsgoyin in Gittin. And that's where, I believe, Rav Teitz was
100%.
Was 100%. There.
Yeah, we're still keeping to this day. We're still keeping Rav Spitz's Minhagim. Now, where did his Minhagim come from? He sat on the basin of Rav Chaim Ozu Brzezinski in Vilna. Mm-hmm. Can't get a better Masorah than that.
I think it's also interesting, you know, just even this point, which I saw displayed often by Rav Teitz, was the recognition from his father already that there are people that are Bali Miktsoya that know more than you in this area, and you hand the ball off to them. You delegate. He told me when I came to him with Amara once, he said, no, you know what? My son is much bigger than me in Maris. And he called your old Chavrusa, Elio, in to be able to be biting the Maris. And I think that was a mida that he was also makabel from his father, and that he exemplified, and he understood. This was his miktsoya in Gitin, and in that area, he really was very, very special.
Seven mice that I was very impressed with was there was a get was being delivered by Shlichus. The husband and wife found it intolerable to be together at the same time. The husband came in and left with the shliach, and between the time of before it was given over, there was somehow the get got torn a little bit into one of the letters, not into one of the crucial portions of the get, but part of the boilerplate, part of the standard text of the get. And Rav Teitz took the he decided, you know that I don't want to deliver this get, even though probably definitely halachically was still good. He didn't want to have any question what's about it. And you know what he did instead? He said he paid the sofer and the edim to sign another get out of his pocket. He paid for for another get, even though it wasn't necessary, because he just doesn't want to rely on the kulas. He doesn't really want to rely on the leniencies. And that was just, I said, okay, this is, the place that I want to be. And that's why I asked to join, and I joined. Now my connection even solidified in 1995 when I was started to date my wife Baruch Hashem, and Rav Teitz and my wife's family go back a long way. First of all, my shver zatzal learned with Rav Teitz zatzal in Tells. So my in-laws called Rav and Robinson Teitz to wait to see what do they say about me. So they said, Baruch Hashem, they said nice things about me, and this should have happened. And also my wife was very close with Rav and Robinson Teitz's daughter Yael, and my wife was at the house many times, greeting her, almost grew up in the house.
He was an extremely devoted family person and connected to family, incredibly loyal and feeling to all members of the family. And I think your story attests to that as well. The extended family, the people that were part of his home, and the warmth that he extended to you was obviously a combination of recognizing your talents, but also the recognition of someone who'd become close in a personal sense. With downloads approaching the million mark and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe that a niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top Yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record, edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36 as a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moya Ritzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen. Perhaps we could both discuss some of what we would call Rav Teitz's greatness in terms of his derech in Torah and Hanhogas HaKehila.
Okay, so I have a couple of stories to tell. One is so my sons were trying to make a scene before his Hanachas Tefillin at the Kotel August of 2012, and we were flying there right after Tisha B'Av. So we needed to finish the last Masechta Shas. What did we leave for last? We left all of us. So we needed the time. So, it's quite an 18 program, a great 18 challenging program. So I wanted to know if I could learn it on Tisha B'Av. So in fact, I asked, one of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, of Sabichi, who was visiting Tinek at the time. He said in 2012, I asked him, are you allowed to learn all of us on Tisha B'Av? He said, yeah, because it's due to us, me. So how enjoyable could it be? So I said, okay, I thought it was over the Kiddush. I wanted to ask Rav Teitz what he thought. So I called him up, and he said, are you kidding? I find learning Masechta Olos very, very enjoyable. So what?
What type of heter? In other words, you have no heter to learn Olos.
There's no heter to learn Olos on Tisha B'Av. So we learned it on the plane instead.
Let me just add to that I'm in my second cycle of giving the Daf Yomi at the Elmora Avenue Shul. Rav Teitz, of course, gave the Daf Yomi at the Adas Israel Shul. When there were times when I wasn't able to give the Daf Yomi, Rav Teitz, of course, was always my first choice. Because first of all, I figured he'd probably done it and it wouldn't be that difficult for him to just repeat it. And despite his age and sometimes infirmity, of course, he was always ready to give the shir. But he told me that when it was Divrei Agoda, that was the part he had the least geschmack in giving over in Daf Yomi. Yes. And he said that the a complex technical blot, that he could get through. But an Agadita, which most people enjoy and it's geschmack, for Rav Teitz, he felt that was the most difficult. In order to make it concrete and make sense and have the psukim work and explain things which were sometimes mystical and beyond, that this was something that he found the most difficult to say in Daf Yomi.
When my oldest son Binyamin and I were delving deeply into the topic of electric shavers during the COVID lockdown, and we came up with a book that's now second edition, hopefully in the third edition, Halachic Haircutting Handbook.
Which, by the way, I think we highlighted when it came out in a conversation that our listeners could find on our platform. If you just search for Rabbi Jachter's name, you'll see that he actually, I think, discusses that book with us.
So we showed to various Rabbanim, to various Gedolim, the PowerPoint that we had an unbelievable Siyad Dishmaya to receive in the summer of 2020 from a top engineer at Philips Norelco, who shared with us the research that they did to understand precisely how the electric shavers work with a special slow motion video and with special high level magnification. And a PowerPoint with all the math and physics showing that it's impossible for the shaver blade to cut like a razor, but it only can cut like a scissors in tandem with the screen. And my son and I made this presentation. We have a whole presentation made to the Rabbanim, to Rav Schechter, to Rav Willig, to Rav Mendelsohn, to Rav, a lot of very, very big Rabbanim. And we showed it to Rav Teitz. And I thought we'd impress him with the math, because I don't know if our listeners know, Rav Teitz earned a PhD in math, and for a number of years he taught math at Rutgers Newark.
And he also and he published in 1970 in a prestigious mathematical journal a whole essay theory in mathematics.
So I thought he'd be so impressed with all the math and the physics and. And meanwhile, his reaction was with all of this. He listened to the whole presentation, and after the whole presentation, he said, "That's obvious. Of course, it works like a scissors. I didn't need all this presentation. It's obvious. Why else is there a screen? Why is there the shaver blades and there's a screen? Why is there a screen? The screen's obviously there because." The shaver blade cuts in tandem, in partnership with the screen. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. It's a basic engineering principle. If something is not necessary, it's not going to be there. If it's there, it's necessary. So it's just, to him, it was just intuitively just so obvious.
Chaim, I think we saw this ourselves when we sat in the Dinei Torah, that Rav Teitz would cut to the chase, get to the essential aspect based on, you know, his incredible mind, but also tethered to common sense. Rav Teitz was an Ilui that was grounded in such a direct way. And that is, I think, what guided him in halacha and in a lot of his interpersonal connections in the community.
The last Din Torah that we had together, one of the Balei Din was Chutzpedit. And Rav Teitz didn't say anything about it. It's just you and I had a reprimanded, not Rav Teitz. He didn't, he just,
that's right.
And this is a man, this is like a 30-year-old was being radically or unbelievably, Chutzpedit towards Rav Teitz.
You're right. In many ways, he seemed impenetrable. Many people, you know, we'll talk about Rav Teitz as Mamshich of the great Mesoira of his father. And it was interesting to me that before we started recording, Rav Chaim, you said to me that Rav Teitz himself saw himself as sort of a Yitzchak figure.
So Rav Teitz loved to be to see himself as Yitzchak Avinu, that his father built up the community and with all the shuls, with the schools. And his job was to be the mamshir, to continue that derech. And Rav Teitz really was very, very rooted, and it expressed itself in halakha, very, very rooted in Mesorah. And he was always the person to consult regarding minhagim. What's the old minhagim? What's the tradition? Because he was so steeped in the Mesorah from his father. And his father also made it his business that Rav Teitz would meet a tremendous amount of Rabbanim, the older Rabbanim. So for example, question becomes like an Aksuba, how do you transliterate New Jersey? You follow the Klal in the Shulchan Aruch, the different ways to do it. How do you translate the J? Do you say the J is Dal Zayin Shin, Dal Zayin? Do you write it, with a Vav Yud for the Urzi part of it? Do you write a Vav Yud? Do you write an Ayin? Do you write a Yud? The various traditions. He said to me straight up, the Rabbanim in Jersey City wrote Jersey City, Dalet Zayin Shin, Vav Yud, Rei Zayin Yud. So there you have it. This is the tradition. And he was the source. And that's why this is one of the more painful feelings that I had this week, was that on Sunday morning, on the day that Rav Teitz was Nifta, on the day of the Levaya, that morning I received a call from one of the top Besaidri Gittin in the United States. His name is Rav Mendel Senderovit. So this week he is an absolute necessity for him to write a get in Trenton, New Jersey. And the last one to write in 1913 was Rabbi Teitz's grandfather. And there seems a change in the way that we pronounce one of the rivers, the Assiniboine Creek. So how should we write it in the get to deviate from what was done in 1913, because pronunciations over time change? So do we do it? Do we not do it? So I was talking with Rav Mendel about it. I said, oh my goodness, you know, my first reaction after the call was, okay, time to get on the cell phone to call Rav Teitz. But then, like the Gemara Brachos in the sixth parak about Rav, we need him to ask to answer the Shaila. Now, what is it that about Rav Teitz would have been was the person we really need, because he was the one that had the Mesorah of the Rabbanim here in New Jersey. If we want to connect back the Mesorah of a hundred years ago, the Rabbanim in New Jersey, this is who you spoke to, the Rabbi Meitz and Uncle Shmid to be Orel. That Psak is not just about looking in the Shulchan Aruch and applying it. You have to. So the meaning of a Sora is an Amud Gadol for Psak Halacha. So what was done in the previous generation? So he was he was the one that would have been the one to be the most with the most authority. Chaval al Da'avin, we don't have that.
There's a Rav here in the city who's involved in Kashrus and other issues, and he also very tzibundin with Rav Teitz. He called Rav Teitz. Rav Teitz was Nifter, I believe. I heard it was right after Shabbos ended, and we'd say Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. So Wednesday night, 72 hours before he was Nifter, My friend called Rav Teitz with a very choshuva shaila, and Rav Teitz picked up the phone right away. And the first thing my friend asked him was, "How's the Rav?" He said, "Miserable, Baruch Hashem." But let's hear what your question is.
It brings to mind a story that he loved to tell. He loved to tell a story about his grandfather. The last thing he did before he died, I believe it was in the year 1934, that Rav Elazar Meir Prel died. He died right before Sukkot. He had only one yoresh. The one yoresh that he had, halachic yoresh, halachic heir, and that was his son, who was not yet bar mitzvah. And he had the only lulav in all of Elizabeth, New Jersey. And if he died, the one yoresh of his halachic heir to that lulav would be a katan. And we know the Gemara in Sukkah tells us that the katan can be kona, can't be maknet. He'll acquire it, it'll become his, but he can't give it to anybody else. So he can be yotzi himself. The whole city won't be able to have the mitzvah of lulav. So what did he do? He had a guest came in. He was maknet the lulav to the guest. That was the last thing he did in his lifetime. In other words, his mind was on the kehillah. So also, you're telling me the story with the kosher shayla, with the basin shayla. So this is what's got.
And he was a realist, Reb Elazar Meir. He obviously knew that things were getting very serious with him. And yet, the last thing that he told this fellow was, "Tell the people involved that I have complete and total trust in you." And I told my friend, who was obviously very shaken and broken, like many people in Elizabeth, that, you know, what an incredible thing to hear from your Rav that he has trust in you, that he trusts you to be mamshich. You know, it's interesting, you know, when Rav Elazar Meir speaks about that he was the Yitzchok persona, you take a look, the first words that Yitzchok pronounces in the Torah is by the Akedah, the word Avi. That's the very first word of Yitzchok. The very first word that Avram says in the Torah in Parshas Lech Lecha is Hine. And in certain ways, maybe we could say that Rav Pinchas Teitz was almost a person who revealed, although, of course, there was a Kehillah before that, the Kehillah of Ishver, but Rav Pinchas was Hine. Behold, here it is. We're going to make it. We're going to form it. He was very much a person, a public persona, a person who was a Rav's Rav, a tremendous speaker, a very outgoing person. And the first word that we have of Yitzchak in the Torah is Avi by the Akedah. And again, you could tell from Rav Teitz the exactitude in which he said over things. But again, just like Yitzchak ultimately has the schus of Klal Yisrael in terms of the famous Chazal of by Yitzias Mitzrayim, Rav Elazar Meir operated in his father's shadow, but in so many ways was such a great person in his own right. The Beirais that Avram had dug, Yitzchak, of course, had to rid of the offer. Yitzchak had to restore. I think in many ways that is an apt metaphor, because Rav Teitz, there were people who questioned things that were true in the time of his father, and he was the defender of those Be'erois. Those Be'erois, and sometimes it was a Be'er Esek where he had to fight for it. And I think this was, in a way, what he saw as a tafkid, that he was a tremendous ish nem unto. In many ways, he was not Beteva, a person who wanted to go out and speak and push himself. I think he took it as an achrayus. I think Beteva, he was a much more of a nechbel akelim person. He loved teaching, but he loved being in that olam. And I think the rabbonis that he took, he sort of was pushed into it in a way that really shows his great devotion. Because it's very hard to stay true to something that in many ways isn't kafi, the ruach hapnimi that vivifies you. And I think you could see that from Rav Teitz often when you spoke to him privately. I have to say that one thing that I noticed about Rav Teitz, despite the fact that he was a champion of the Messiah of Elizabeth and the Menhagim, and as you say, the Rabbonim of New Jersey, he was not a Luddite. He wasn't a person that was in any way frayed or an older dinosaur of new things. I think he was a person that was fascinated by technology and new ideas and was eager to use them. A number of people became close to Rav Teitz as sort of a cyber pen pal when Rav Teitz was part of the Das and Avoda, it was sort of like a forum of people who were just getting into using the internet and using it as sort of like what we would call now chats and comments in Divrei Torah. And if you're able to use like this Wayback Machine and to find them, you can find hundreds and hundreds of places where Rav Elazar Meir would comment and be part of a cyber conversation. It was something that he understood was the new frontier, and it was something that he was clear a part of.
I realized when I joined the Beis Din in 1992, there were only two active sites to be Masada Gittin at that time in New Jersey. It was Elizabeth and Passaic. But that wasn't tenable. You need if you want to be able to reach the people that you need to reach, especially the people who are not yet observant, that they're divorced on a very high rate, and they're going to remarry, you have Mamzerim. You need to, or at least Shilas of Ramzeros, and you need to be able to reach them and to service them properly. And if you can limit it to only these two cities, it's going to cause a problem with Ramzeros. So I began a campaign of being Makovea, new cities where to be able to write Gittin, and together with the top group, together with Tights and other the top postkin in the United States, with Nota Greenblatt, with Gaia Schwartz. We established new places to write Gittin. We established in Edison. We established in Teaneck. We established in Livingston. So this way, we'd be able to reach out to the people and be able to properly service the people that need to be served. Now, people are understandably and necessarily, as you have found the Shalos and Shuas Nevi Yehuda, very reluctant to be Masada Gittin in a place that had not been Gittin administered beforehand. But nonetheless, he saw the need, he recognized the need, and he was willing to make that leap into the change and to have his basin be at the forefront of making this new introduction, which was very, very important in facilitating many, many Gittin. What also stands out really is that you can take a look at a document that's posted online. You can Google Jachter Ksubos 70 Cities Updated, and you can see that I have a list of 70 cities in the New York area, how to spell them in Ksubos. And I specifically had asked Rav Tice to review this document. He made many, many comments, and it all reflects his opinions. So now you can have 70 cities, many of them from New Jersey, that would you have his authority to know how to spell these names in the Ksubos. And it's a very well used document. This is a Rabbanim use it regularly in this way, but they know that it's not just an opinion of Rav Tice, but it's well rooted in Masora. How do you write Linden in a Ksuba? So how that, because it's a tradition from his father.
Now, Me'inyan Le'inyan, as you know, Be'iske Gittin V'Kedushin, Rav Tice was the Masader Kedushin by both of my sons. And one of my sons got married in Eretz Yisrael in 2013. And Rav Tice found the wedding hall in Bnei Brak, and he took over. Even though the Bnei Eretz Yisrael had their own kpedis and tainas, exactly how things should happen, he made sure that as the chosen was an American boy, that we were going to do things based on Rav Tice's approach. And I said to him after the chuppah, I said, Rav, I got to see the Rav in action. Because here he was, answering, responding. Rav Tice was was excellent. His ability not only to write, to get the ksuva written properly, but to basically organize the whole chuppah. And this he did for my other son too, who was married in New Jersey. He was the master at efficiency, the master at halachic exactitude. And he was also the master of defending things whenever he was challenged, because he did not speak unless he was clear about something. I don't think there were many who were able to convey in as a concise form the ideas as clearly as Rav Tice was able to do. This was obviously a gift, and it was a gift that was honed by his very sharp intelligence.
We were together at a wedding. And I wasn't the Masada, he wasn't the Masada, but he said to me, one of the things you have to do is, and I do this every time I'm in Masada Kedushin, people really appreciate it, says you have to set a schedule. You have to create the structure. You have to say, you have to get a time in advance when we're starting the Tanaim, when we're starting the Ksuba, when Spincha is going to be, when the Badekin is going to be, when the Chuppah is going to be. You have to be very, very, you have to create a structure. If you don't create a structure, then things take over. It's very chaotic. And you won't be able to run things in smoothly. So I thought that was a tremendous piece of advice that he gave me. And another thing was one time we sat together at actually the chuppah, and he was telling me what the minhagim were for the previous generations. So one thing that really stood out to me, all in Europe, was the rabbanim made the shabbat brachas. Today in America, the family members, the brother, the uncle, this one is saying it. But no, he said Rabbanim. And when you think about it, it really makes a lot of sense, because the Rabbanim are, with them being the Shabbos, they're putting their stamp of approval on this marriage. And I wrote about two issues that were Pinchas Tites was very involved with. Of course, I had to speak to Rav Tites, who Ramoche as a pretty well-known shuva in Or Chaim Chelek Aleph, where he permits bringing a guide dog into the shul. Now, this shuva was written in the 1950s to Rav Pinchas Tites. And a very interesting topic. You can access it online. What I've written about this, the summary of the machlokas discussion. But when I called Rav Tites to tell me, tell me a little bit of the backstory. So he said, number one, his father agreed with Rav Tites' psak, and he implemented Rav Moshe's psak. In other words, Rav Moshe's psak was not just something in theory.
And again, part of that is also the understanding of what it means, of a person attending shul. The idea of a person being able to be part of the community, covet of the mensch that was exhibited in that psak.
And one other story on the chumrah side was, we know that the Gros Moshe in Yoredei Chelek Aleph, that the Pinchas Tites in the late 40s had a tremendous ongoing masa matan with Rav Moshe about blended liquor. That you have scotch, that you have whiskey, that you'd have a little bit of wine, if non-kosher wine is in there. Are we allowed to have it? We not allowed to have it? That was Rav Moshe actually felt that Mikra Din is actually allowed. And then Pinchas Tites was Eish Lahava Machmir on this issue. I remember hearing stories that some of these products, once at the Kiddush in Elizabeth, Rav Elazar Meir saw it there, and he was like, oh no. You put that is not to be served at a Kiddush in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And it's interesting, I observed, I talked to Tice about this 2 years ago, and I said to him that, look, Lamaisa, your father won the day. Because if you look at the CRC liquor list, the Star K liquor list, and then that's actually very well accepted amongst the caterers, who do they follow? They don't follow Lamaisa, they follow his father. So Rav Elazar Meir responded he said, over the sense of humor, he said, what's a tzorach? You know, so he said he never heard of a young mother frantically searching to find Mahadran whiskey for her children.
The flip side, of course, is another, Rav Tites was never makabel for the shul in large to be machmer in Chol of Yisrael, even though in the school itself, they serve Chol of Yisrael, but at Kiddushin and other events, socials, ice cream socials, it wasn't machmir that the shul had to be makbid. And again, here you see, I think, an understanding of the community.
Right, you thought it's tzora, but for the liquor, what's it tzora?
Rav Tites, true to his independent, his strength, his nature, Masaira. He wasn't always just makabel just because it was geschriben. He pushed back on various psalkim that were in the Mishnah Berurah that I once had a conversation with him about, and that was the way they fearzach in the shul in terms of how to end the broch of Gal Yisrael before Shemoneh Esrei. And he would tell me, look, he knows it's in the Mishnah Berurah, but that didn't necessarily mean that he was going to just fold the tent. And that is something which I think is a great strength. Rav Tites was someone who came from a different brand where it was, where the topic had to be understood from the Shoyrish and going through it. And I think that was something that led him sometimes to have psalkim that were sometimes different. I think that was the derech, really, of what the Goyin said. The Goyin told Rav Chaim Voloshner that you could dintzich on the Ramah with a raya and you can ding to maybe even to the Rosh with the Masoira. But that was something that I think that you saw exhibited by the Rav in ways that, as you say, Chaval da Abdin, v'zichr v'lo mishtachan.
One thing I want to make sure just mention at the end is the Daf Yomi. Is that the Daf Yomi of the day of Rav Taitz's Patira was definitely speaking about Hespe. The Daf before was speaking about that the Halonas Ameis, delaying the funeral, and it could be done lechvodo. And there was a little bit of Halon, you have to wait till Eliyahu David could get in from America. The funeral was at night, the kvodo was at night. And it's just an unbelievable testament. It's just the Daf Yomi that you know, they're so dedicated doing the Daf Yomi since 1980 that the Daf Yomi would work out. The Daf is almost like the Daf Yomi is always mourning along the loss of Rav Taitz, who's talking about got the sugyas of the Hesped and Shiva.
We of course extend our divrei nechama not only to the family, but also really, as I said, as we started recording, really the whole Kehillah of Elizabeth and many, many the world beyond who are shocked and realize that they are taka Svina Shaovda Kanevat. His chuyos are immense. To just say Tezichrei Baruch seems to be totally insufficient. Rebbe Umayri, our Rav Bezdin, it's taka Rechev Yisroel Proshov. It's not shaykh to really think of Tmurosli. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.